Passing the motorhome, going too fast to prevent the Honda from straddling the double yellow line all the way around the curve, China had been afraid that the parched engine would cough and choke and fail. Now that she had seen the red warning light, she was aware of it, a peripheral radiance, even when she wasn't looking at the instrument panel. But the Honda ran confidently on dregs, on fumes, on some strange grace. She needed to put distance between herself and the killer and gain time to set her plan in motion. She pushed the car as hard as she dared on the storm-greased pavement. The narrow road rounded another bend, straightened out, entered a gradual descent, took another curve, rose on a gentle slope, but descended again, and in spite of the intermittent interruptions of these extremely low inclines, the land was generally monotonous in its contours, making its way steadily down toward the Pacific, not many miles to the west. Now low ramparts of soft earth flanked the blacktop just beyond both shoulders, and this wasn't suitable for her purposes. But then the road returned to the same level as the surrounding forest, and she entered another almost imperceptibly declining straightaway and found the ideal circumstances that she required. She figured that she had gained a full minute on him, maybe a minute and a half, depending on whether he had appreciably increased his speed after she passed him. Anyway, a minute should be long enough. She slowed to 30 miles an hour and nonetheless seemed to be hurtling through the woods. She let the speed decrease to 25, wondering again about her headlong rush to heroism, but still unable fully to understand it. Then she drove off the roadway, flew across the right shoulder, thumped through a shallow drainage swale, and rammed into the fortress base of one of the biggest of the redwoods. The left headlight burst. The impact-absorbing bumper cracked and crumpled and collapsed as it had been designed to do, and metal shrieked but briefly. Because she was wearing a safety harness, she wasn't thrown into the steering wheel or through the windshield, but the diagonal strap tightened so hard across her breasts that she grunted with shock and pain. The engine was still running. With no time to get out and inspect the front of the car, China was afraid that the damage wasn't sufficiently impressive to convince the killer that someone could have been injured in the crash. When he came upon this scene a few seconds from now, he must take everything at face value without hesitation. Otherwise, if he was suspicious, nothing would work as she had planned. Immediately, she shifted the Honda into reverse and backed away from the tree, which stood inviolate. The ground was carpeted with wet redwood needles on which the tires spun before gripping, but not enough rain had fallen to churn the earth into mud. Rattling and clinking, the car bounced across the shallow drainage swale, which ran with only an inch or two of muddy water, and backed it onto the pavement again. China glanced toward the top of the gently ascending slope down which she had just driven. As yet, there was not even a faint glow of approaching headlights from beyond the curve. He was coming, no doubt about that. Soon. She didn't have time to reverse even part of the way up the slope, but she needed to build a little speed. With her left foot, she tramped the brake pedal as far toward the floorboards as it would go, and with her right foot, she eased down on the accelerator. The engine whined, then shrieked. The car strained like a spurred horse pressing against the gate of a rodeo chute. She could feel it wanting to surge forward as if it were a living thing, and she wondered how much acceleration would be too much, enough to kill her or trap her in wreckage. Then she gave it a little more juice, smelt something burning, and raised her left foot from the brake pedal. The tire spun furiously on the glistering blacktop, and then with a shudder the Honda shot forward, rattled and splashed across the ditch, and slammed into the trunk of the redwood. The right headlight burst. Metal squealed, the hood crumpled and tweaked and popped open with a sound oddly like a hard strum on a banjo, but the windshield didn't shatter. The engine stuttered. Either the fuel had been exhausted at last or the crash had done severe mechanical damage. Gasping for breath after the cinching punishment of the shoulder harness, praying that the engine wouldn't fail just yet, China popped the car into reverse again. Ideally, the Honda would be blocking the road when the killer came around the bend. She had to force him to stop and to get out of his motorhome. The battered car wheezed, almost stalled, then unexpectedly revved, and China said gratefully, "Jesus," as it rolled backward onto the pavement. She pulled across both lanes but swung around a little, angling the car uphill so the killer would be able to see the damaged front end as soon as he negotiated the curve. The engine clunked twice and died, but that was all right. She was in position. Without the engine noise for competition, the rain seemed to be falling more forcefully than before, rattling on the roof and snapping against the glass. At the upper curve, darkness still held. She put the Honda in park, so it would not coast backward when she took her foot off the brake. The headlights were both broken out, but the windshield wipers continued to thump back and forth, operating on battery power. She didn't switch them off. She opened the driver's door and, feeling horribly exposed in the dome light, started to get out. She needed to be away from the car and in hiding by the time the motorhome appeared, which would be in maybe 20 seconds, maybe 10, hard to say because she had lost track of how much time had passed since she herself had driven around the bend. The gun. Before she fully escaped the car, China remembered the revolver. She swung back inside, reached for the weapon, but it was no longer on the seat. In the first or second crash, the gun must have been thrown onto the floor. Leaning across the console between the front seats, she felt frantically in the darkness, found cold steel, the barrel, her finger actually slipping into the smooth muzzle. With a wordless murmur of relief, she fished the gun from the foot space and reversed her grip on it. With the weapon firmly in hand, she scrambled out of the Honda. She left the driver's door standing open. Rain chilled her, and wind. In the direction from which he had come, the night brightened faintly, and the redwood trunks near the shoulder of the curve began to glow as if in the radiance of a sudden moon. China sprinted off the slippery blacktop and splashed through another shallow drainage ditch, shuddering as the icy water poured over the tops of her shoes. On this side of the pavement, the trees were set back 20 or 30 feet from the shoulder. She headed for the colossal woods at a point directly across the highway from the behemoth into which she had driven the Honda. Long before she reached the nearest tree, she skidded on the spongy mat of wet needles, fell and landed on a cluster of redwood cones. The cones crumbled slightly, a hard crunching sound against the small of her back, although judging by the flash of pain, it almost seemed as though her spine was the source of the cracking. She would have preferred to crawl on her hands and knees to concealment, but she had to hold onto the revolver, and she was concerned that crawling she would inadvertently plug the barrel with dirt or wet needles. She was up and moving at once, therefore, as the highway behind her flared with light and an engine quarreled noisily with the storm. The motorhome had turned the bend. She was only 15 feet or so from the highway, which wasn't far enough, because there was little underbrush to provide cover beneath the giant redwoods, largely ferns and more of them in the gloom ahead than in the area immediately around her. He must not see her. All was lost if he glimpsed her as she dashed for cover. Fortunately, her blue jeans were dark, not stonewashed and highly reflective, and her sweater was cranberry red, which was not as bad as if it had been white or yellow, and her hair was not blonde, but dark. Yet she could have felt no more visible if she had been trying to run to cover in a wedding dress. He would be focused on the Honda, surprised to see it angled across both lanes. He wouldn't immediately glance to either side of the highway, and when his attention did flicker away from the car, he was likely to look to the right, where the Honda had run off the road and struck the tree, not to the left, where China was seeking shelter. Telling herself that she was safe and had not been seen, but not actually believing herself, she reached the first phalanx of massive redwoods. They grew astonishingly close to one another, considering their daunting size. She slipped around the deeply corrugated trunk of a 15-foot diameter giant that thrived in such intimacy with an even larger specimen that the passageway between the towering pair was less than 2 feet. The lowest branches above her were 150 to 180 feet off the ground, visible only when lightning backlit them. Standing between these trunks was rather like standing between the nave columns of a cathedral, too large ever to be built this side of heaven. The bristled boughs formed majestic vaults 15 stories overhead. From her damp and cloistered retreat, she peered out warily at the highway. Beyond the lacy screen of low ferns, silver plating the rain and growing brighter by the second, came the headlights of the motorhome. They were accompanied by the soft pule of air brakes.
Mr. Vest stops on the pavement, as the shoulder is neither wide enough nor firm enough to accommodate his motorhome. Although the scenic highway is obviously little used in these hours before dawn, and in such foul weather as this, he is loath to block traffic any longer than is absolutely necessary. He well knows the California vehicle code. He pushes the gear shift into park, engages the emergency brake, but leaves the engine running and the headlights on. He doesn't bother to slip into his raincoat, and when he gets out of the motorhome, he leaves the door standing open. The rain on the pavement is a drumming, and on the metal of the vehicles a singing, and on the foliage of the trees a chorus chanting wordlessly. The rain sounds please him, as does the chill, as does the fecund smell of ferns and loamy soil. This is the same Honda that passed him a few minutes earlier. He is not surprised to see it in this sorry condition, considering the reckless speed at which it had been traveling. Evidently, the car had skidded off the road and into the tree. Then the driver had backed it onto the pavement again before the engine failed. But where is the driver? Another motorist might have come along from the west and might have taken any injured person to get medical treatment, but that seems too fortuitous and too timely. After all, the accident can't have happened more than a minute or two ago. The driver's door is open, and when Vess leans inside, he sees that the keys are in the ignition. The windshield wipers sweep the glass. The taillights, the interior ceiling light, and the gauges in the instrument panel are all aglow. He steps away from the car and looks at the tree toward which the tire tracks lead. The bark is scarred from the impact, but only superficially. Intrigued, he surveys the rest of the grove on that side of the highway. Quite possibly the driver climbed out of the wrecked car, dazed from a blow to the head, and wandered into the redwoods. Even now she might be traveling farther into the primeval grove, lost and confused, or maybe, having collapsed from injuries, she lies unconscious in a fern glade. The closely grown trees form a maze of narrow corridors, more wood than open space. Even at high noon on a cloudless day, sunshine would penetrate to the forest floor only in a few thin, bright blades, and stubborn darkness would impose itself in most of these deep reaches, as though each of the many hundreds of thousands of nights since the grove's beginning had left its residue of shadows. Now, still on the witching side of dawn, that blackness is so pure that it seems almost like a thing alive, crouching and predatory and yet welcoming. This special darkness stirs Mr. Vess and makes him yearn for experiences that he senses are available to him, but that he cannot imagine. Experiences that are mysterious and transforming, yet which he cannot even dimly envision. Far into the redwoods, down corridors of fissured bark, in some secret citadel of bestial passion, where shadows dwell that are older than human history, a mystical adventure awaits. If the woman, in fact, is wandering in the woods, he could park the motor home and search for her. Perhaps the knife that he found at the service station is an omen, after all, and hers may be the blood that he is meant to draw with that blade. He imagines what it would be like to take off his clothes and enter the grove naked with the knife, relying solely on his primitive instincts to stalk her and bring her down, the rain and mist cold on his skin, the air steaming once he has breathed it, unchilled by the rain but imparting his heat to the night, tearing ferociously at the woman's clothes as he drags her to the forest floor. He is already erect with the dream of it, but he wonders if he would attack her first with knife or phallus, or perhaps with his teeth. That decision would be made in the moment of capture, and much would depend on how attractive she was. But he is convinced that whatever might happen between them would be unprecedented and mysterious, and inexpressibly intense. Dawn is coming in an hour or so, however, and he would be wise to be on his way. He must put more distance between himself and the places where he took his entertainment during the night. Being good at being Edgler Vess requires, among other qualities, the ability to repress his most ardent passions when indulgence in them is dangerous. If he instantly gratified every desire, he would be less a man than an animal, and either long dead or imprisoned. Being Edgler Vess means being free, but not reckless, being quick, but not impulsive. He must have a sense of proportion and good timing. Hell, he needs the timing of a tap dance master. And a nice smile. A truly nice smile, combined with self-control, can take a person a long way. He smiles at the forest. The motorhome stood on the pavement, approximately 20 feet from the battered Honda, shrunken in appearance because the redwoods dwarfed it. As the killer had walked down the roadway to the abandoned car through the headlight beams from the motor home, China had crept upslope through the dark forest, moving parallel to him but in the opposite direction. She had circled behind the tree to the right of her, gripping the revolver in her right hand, with her left hand flat against the trunk for balance in case she stumbled over a root or other obstruction. Under her palm she had felt the deep pattern of repetitive Gothic arches formed by the fissures in the thick bark.
With each uncertain step that she had taken around this great, easy curve, she had felt that the tree was less like a tree than like a building, a windowless fortress erected against all the rage of the world. After navigating a hemisphere of the trunk to the shoulder-wide gap between this tree and the next, she peered out once more. The killer stood near the open door of the Honda, gazing into the forest on the far side of the highway. She was worried that another motorist would come along before she could carry out her plan. She moved on, circling the next tree. It was even larger than the previous behemoth. The bark featured the familiar Gothic patterns. In spite of the shrill wind keening high above and collected drizzles of rain spattering down from the lofty branches, the grove impressed her as a good, safe place, dark but not in spirit, cold but not forbidding. She was still alone in her troubles, but curiously, for the first time all night, she didn't feel alone. At the next trunk-framed gap in the forest wall, China looked out again and saw the killer getting into the Honda. He would have to move the disabled car out of the way, because there wasn't room to drive around it. She glanced at the motorhome, perhaps because she knew what lay within it, a dead man closeted in chains, a dead woman swaddled in a white shroud. The vehicle seemed as ominous as any war machine. She could just wait in the grove, forget about her plan. He would leave and life would go on. So easy to wait. Survive. The police would find the girl, Ariel, somehow, in time, without the need for heroics. China leaned against the tree, suddenly weak, weak and shaking, shaking and almost physically ill with despair, with fear. The taillights and interior lights of the Honda dimmed with the grinding of the starter as the killer tried to get the engine to turn over. Then another noise came to China, much closer than the car, behind her, a rustle, a snap, a soft snort like a startled horse exhaling. Frightened, she turned. In the backwash of light from the motorhome out on the highway, China saw angels in the redwood grove. Or so it seemed for a moment. Regarding her were gentle faces, pale in the darkness, eyes luminous and inquisitive and kind. But even in that meager, moon-like glow, she was unable to sustain a hope of angels. After a brief initial confusion, she realized that these creatures were a breed of coastal elk without antlers. Six stood together in a 15-foot-wide space between this outer row of trees and the deeper growth, so close that China could have been among them in three steps. Their noble heads were lifted, ears pricked, gazes fixed intently on her. The elk were curious, but although timid by nature, they seemed oddly unafraid of her. Once, for 2 months, she and her mother had stayed on a ranch in Mendocino County, where a group of well-armed survivalists waited for the race wars that they believed would soon destroy the nation. And in that doomsday atmosphere, China had spent as much time as possible exploring the surrounding countryside, hills and vales of singular beauty, groves of pines, golden fields where scattered oaks stood each alone and huge and black-limbed against the sky, and where small herds of coastal elk appeared from time to time, always keeping at a distance from human beings and their works. She had stalked them not as a hunter, but with awkward girlish guile, as shy as the elk themselves, but irresistibly attracted to the tranquility and the peace that they radiated in a world otherwise saturated with violence. In those 2 months, she had never managed to get closer than 80 or 90 feet to the elk herds before they had reacted to her nonchalant approach, winning to farther fields and ridges. Now they had approached her, vigilant but not frightened, as if they were the same elk of her childhood, at long last willing to believe in her peaceable intentions. Coastal elk should have been somewhat closer to the sea, in the open meadows beyond the redwoods, where the grass was lush and green from the winter rains, where the grazing was good. Although they were not strangers to the forest, their presence here in the rainy pre-dawn darkness was remarkable. Then she saw others in addition to the herd of six, one here, one there, and there a third, and still more, between trees, at a greater distance than the initial group. Some were barely visible in the bosky grove, at the extreme reach of the backwash from the motorhome headlights, but she thought that there were as many as a dozen altogether, all standing at attention, as though transfixed by woodland music beyond human hearing. Lightning spread branches across the sky, put down jagged roots toward the earth, and briefly brightened the grove sufficiently for China to see all the elk more clearly than before. More of them than she had thought. In mist and ferns, among flowering red rhododendron, revealed by fluttering leaves of light. Heads lifted, their breath streaming from black nostrils. Their eyes fixed on her. She looked out at the highway. The killer had given up trying to start the engine. He put the Honda in gear, and it began to roll backward on the slightly sloped pavement. After one last glance at the elk, China stepped out from between the two redwoods. The killer pulled the steering wheel hard to the right, letting the momentum of the car carry it backward in an arc until it was facing downhill. Through sparse ferns and scattered clumps of bunch grass, China approached the highway. The weakness in her legs was gone, and her spasm of irresolution had passed. Under the killer's guidance, the Honda coasted downhill and onto the right shoulder. She could go after him, shoot him in the car, or as he got out of the car, but he was 50 yards away now, 60, and he would surely see her coming. She would have no hope of keeping the advantage of surprise, so she would have to shoot to kill, which would do Ariel no good at all, because with this bastard dead they would still have to search for the girl wherever she was hidden. And they might never find her. Besides, the creep probably had a gun on him, and if this turned into a shooting match, he would win, because he was far more practiced than she was, and bolder. She had no one to whom she could turn, as in childhood. So now get out of sight quickly. Don't be rash. Wait for the ideal situation. Pick the moment of the confrontation and control the showdown when it comes. Fierce lightning again, and a long, hard crash of thunder like vast structures collapsing high in the night. She reached the motor home. Oh, God. The driver's door stood open. Oh, Jesus. Oh, God. She couldn't do it. She had to do it. Downhill on the shoulder with a rattle of twisted steel, the Honda was coasting to a stop. She had the revolver. That made all the difference. She was safe with the gun. Who will save this girl hidden in a cellar? This girl ripening for this son of a bitch bastard freak? This girl like me? Who is ever there for frightened girls hiding in the backs of closets or under beds? Who is ever there but twitching palmetto beetles? Who will be there if not me? Where will I be if not there? Why is this the only choice? And when the answer is so obvious, why even ask why? Downslope, the Honda came to a full stop. With the revolver heavy in her hand, China climbed into the cockpit and behind the steering wheel. She swung around in the driver's seat, got up, and hurried back through the motorhome, murmuring, Jesus! Jesus! Telling herself that it was all right, this crazy thing she was doing, all right because this time she had the revolver. But she wondered if even the gun would give her enough of an edge when the time arrived to go face to face with this man. Of course, a direct confrontation might never have to take place. China intended to hide until they arrived at his house, and then find out where the girl was being held. With that information, she would be able to go to the police, and they could nail this creep and free Ariel and... And what? And in saving the girl, she would save herself. From what? She was not sure. From a life of merely surviving? From the endless and fruitless struggle to understand? Crazy. Crazy, but there was no turning back now, and in her heart she knew that risking all was less crazy than living a life that had no higher goal than survival. As if thrown forward by the hard knocking of her heart, China reached the rear of the motorhome, the closed door to the only bedroom. Jesus. She didn't want to go in there. With Laura dead, the man in the closet, the sewing kit waiting to be used again. Jesus. But it was the best place to hide. So she opened the door and went in and closed the door behind her and eased to the left through the palpable darkness and put her back against the wall. Maybe he wouldn't drive straight home. He might stop at some point between here and there to come to the back of the motorhome and have a look at his trophies. Then she would kill him the instant that he stepped through the door, empty the revolver into him, take no chances. With him dead, they might never find Ariel. Or they might find her only after she had perished of starvation, an excruciatingly painful way to die. Nevertheless, if the killer entered this bedroom, China wouldn't rely on half measures. She would not attempt to wound him and keep him alive for police interrogation, not in this tight space with him looming over her and with so many ways that things could go wrong.
Lights off. Windshield wipers off. Edgler Vest sits in the dead car by the side of the road, thinking. There are numerous ways that he can proceed from here. Life is always a laden buffet of treats, a vast smorgasbord groaning with infinite choices of sensations and experiences to thrill the heart, but never more so than now. He wishes to exploit the opportunity to the fullest possible extent, to extract from it the greatest possible excitement and the most poignant sensations, and he must, therefore, not act precipitously. Luck had given him a glimpse of her in the rearview mirror, as fleet as a deer across the blacktop, hesitating at the open door of the motorhome, and then up and inside and out of sight. She must be the woman from the Honda. When she had passed him earlier, he had looked down through the windshield of her car and had seen her red sweater. In the accident, she might have received a hard blow to the head. Now perhaps she is dazed, confused, frightened. This would explain why she doesn't approach him directly and ask for help or for a ride to the nearest service station. If her thoughts are addled, the irrational decision to become a stowaway aboard the motorhome might seem perfectly reasonable to her. She did not appear to be suffering from a head injury, however, or any injury at all. She hadn't staggered or stumbled across the highway, but had been swift and sure-footed. At this distance and in the rearview mirror, Vess wouldn't have been able to see blood even if she had been bleeding, but he knows intuitively that there was no blood. The longer that he considers the situation, the more it seems to him that the accident was staged. But why? If the motive had been robbery, she would have accosted him the moment that he had stepped onto the highway. Besides, he isn't driving one of those elaborate $300,000 land yachts that, by their very flashiness, advertise their contents to thieves. His vehicle is 17 years old, and though well-maintained, worth considerably less than $50,000. It seems pointless to wreck a relatively new Honda for the purpose of looting the contents of an aging vehicle that promises no treasures. He has left his keys in the ignition, the engine running. She already could have driven away in the motorhome if that had been her intention. And a woman alone on a lonely highway at night is not likely to be planning a robbery. Such behavior doesn't fit any criminal profile. He is baffled. Deeply. Mr. Vess's simple life is not often touched by mystery. There are things that can be killed and things that can't. Some things are harder to kill than others, and some are more fun to kill than others. Some scream, some weep, some do both, some only tremble silently and wait for the end as if having spent their whole lives in anticipation of this awful pain. Thus, the days go by, pleasantly straightforward, a river of raw sensation upon which enigma seldom sets sail. But this woman in a red sweater is an enigma, all right, as mysterious and intriguing as anyone Mr. Vess has ever known. What experiences he will have with her are difficult to imagine, and he is excited by the prospect of such novelty. He gets out of the Honda and closes the door.